listening to The Afternoon Show, and I'm Anne Forbes Cooper.
And I'm Tom Rowe.
And our next guest is Renee Van Schaack, who's the Interim Executive Director of the Green County Industrial Development Agency, and also the Director of Community and Environmental Programs for the Green Business Alliance, as well as the Executive Director of the GLT. Renee was formerly the Executive Director of the Green County Soil and Water Conservation District. He was that for 19 years. Welcome to the afternoon show.
Thank you, Anne.
Let me start off by asking you, just give us an update on the progress of the cleanup of Hurricane Irene in Green County.
Right. Well, I can only speak to a certain part of it, obviously, that we're trying to do to help the small businesses. I think what's really important for people to understand out there is that this is really a major effort of both at the county level, federal, state, et cetera. From an economic standpoint, if people have seen the pictures on YouTube or videos or stuff on Facebook, I can assure you those pictures, that, you know, when they say a picture says 1,000 words, those pictures are almost like mute because you have to see it physically in person to really appreciate the depth of the devastation. And as you noted, I was the executive director of the Soil and Water Conservation District for close to 19 years, and I did a lot of work in them watersheds. And it's very heartbreaking personally to go to places like the Prattsville Diner, where I've probably had 1,000, you know, tuna fish sandwiches over the years, and see it closed down and devastated. So we've really tried to combine our efforts over in Greene County between the County Bureau of Department of Economic Development, as well as the Greene County IDA, to take the limited resources that we have available to try to help these small businesses get on their feet. Traditionally, the IDA really works on a little bit on what people think of us again when you see industrial in our name. You know, you're thinking big industry or heavy industry. We have worked across a lot of sectors, and we have worked with small businesses before, but it hasn't been our strong point. And we truly believe that, you know, small businesses are the backbone of the community. I think if you look statistically, something like 90% of the employment in this country is in businesses of 10 people or less, small industries. And when we saw the flood happen, we realized we had to try to do whatever we could do to help out. So besides the stuff that Warren Hart is doing with his department, with the Micro Enterprise Loan Program, the Main Street Grant Program, et cetera, some of the powers that we have as an IDA or authorities, let's say, that we use to promote businesses coming in are really in three categories. One being a pilot, and you hear about pilots all the time, typically not in a very positive light.
That's a payment in lieu of taxes.
That's correct. Okay. And, you know, the emphasis is that, you know, New York State, obviously nobody would disagree. New York State is one of the most burdensome states from a tax perspective. And so in order to promote business coming in, giving them tax breaks, we're not applying that program under the flooding condition because we just don't think it's appropriate. And we think that the communities will do right by their own businesses when it comes to the taxable assessment. Two other important tools that we have. One is a mortgage tax exemption. So you go to borrow money, you're subject to a mortgage tax, which in Greene County is 1.25%, essentially 50 cents to the town, 50 cents to the county, and 25 cents to the state of New York. We can exempt that when it's for the purposes of promoting economic development, job retention, or job growth. We have that program on the table, but it's a little bit more cumbersome and a little more burdensome paperwork-wise. And I guess, and unless a business, and I can assure you there's a number of them up there that are going to be facing hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment or reinvestment, it's probably not going to pay. So, but we expect to see some people come in on that. More importantly, and the power we more commonly use with small businesses is we have the ability to exempt from sales tax, sales and use tax. And we can provide an exemption on both on materials, supplies, equipment, pretty much anything that's taxable that a business would need to either get started or, in this case, to get restarted. And again, it's usually used with the eye on creating new jobs or bringing companies in. And you can imagine when you're investing $52 million, let's say, like a large warehouse complex, saving 8% on your building and supply materials can be pretty significant financial incentive for you. Now, in the county here now with the small businesses, we've set the program up. We've tried to do it. To the best of our knowledge, this has not been done ever before on a statewide basis. It's clearly within the mandate that we have to retain jobs. Usually people are looking to retain 200-400 jobs or a couple hundred. We're looking at the heart of a community, which again is that, I met a husband and wife in Prattsville the other day. You know, the wife, they run an oil company. It's the husband drives a truck. The brother-in-law drives a truck. The wife takes the orders at the office. But there's three people that they keep employed, and they're also important in that community supplying the oil. Well, he's facing having to replace a couple of trucks, oil trucks, as you can well imagine. You know what we pay for a car. Oil trucks are rather expensive, so, you know, well over $100,000 each. So there's an $8,000 savings to them. Considering that their house was washed off the foundation, they could use every penny they can get. So we've targeted that at as damages as low as $5,000, which in some cases people may find that at that low threshold, it may or may not pay for them to do all the paperwork and go through the rigmarole. But it is still on $5,000, that's $480 or something in savings on taxes, and it might make the difference in buying a new carpet to put down in your art shop or in your little or putting a new linoleum in the kitchen in your small bakery.
I mean, what I've heard from some of these small businesses is that no matter how long you give them an interest-free loan or how long you defer sales tax, they still can't afford a loan. There are any kind of a loan. Their business has gone out from under them. I know one person in particular who runs a shop. She's lost all her inventory. Plus, the job that she had, she was working. She had another job in the evenings in Wyndham. That's also gone. And she's she can't even contemplate getting a loan because she's no way of paying it back.
That's right. That is a big issue. And unfortunately, clearly we at the local level don't have any say in how the FEMA and the others write their rules. I've dealt with probably a half a dozen or more of these federal disaster declarations in my time at Soil and Water. And every time it's heartbreaking to see that. And I still myself don't quite understand why FEMA can make a direct grant to a homeowner for $30,000.
But not to a business.
But not to a business. And you're absolutely right. And what do you do when you had an outstanding mortgage of whatever it was, $30,000, $40,000, or $100,000 or $150,000, and today you're standing looking at a building that's got a big red X on it and a sign posted on it says condemned and has to come down. Obviously, the bank's not sympathetic to that.
So let me ask you two questions. First of all, I mean, what was Prattsville like in terms of how much have they done of the cleanup? How much progress have they made up there?
Well, I have not been up there this week. I was up there last week. And again, as I said, I spent a lot of time in that community, so I'm very, very familiar with it. I like to ride my motorcycle through there frequently, too. They're making progress every day. But when you look, the job to me still has not looked any more overwhelming, you know, and I've talked to them and those people are, God bless them. They're really keeping their strength up. I mean, that is the American way. We complain and everything else we want at the end of the day, but we are pretty tenacious little son of a guns. And, and I see that in them, but I also see that there are some, extremely hard questions that they're facing and there are not easy answers for them and not in a bad economy with winter closing in. And as again, Prattsville was what it was. It's a small community. A couple of dozen businesses up there, mainly catered right to the local area. It was sort of not a sustainable community in that sense, but it was a true community.
And how many of them have actually reached out to you for these loans?
Well, in our case, we're not doing the loans. The county through economic development is doing the microenterprise. So I can't really speak to them. What I can tell you is our staff has been going out in the field jointly with the county planning staff side by side to the people sitting in the trailers with them. And we have to actually act on the applications. Our board of directors has to take a formal action. We're doing special meetings. And so we're probably right about a half a dozen applications right now and increasingly getting more and more calls as people sort of wade through the myriad of things that they have to deal with. Yeah.
And what about this new initiative between yourselves and the Green County Tourism and Development?
Well, that's essentially what it is. It's kind of up. And the other thing that the IDA did is the chairman of the legislature, Wayne Spienberg, who's been a personal friend for many years as well as a good supporter, came to me and said, "Look, Renee, we want to try to raise a pot of money in donations. Could you guys help me kick this off with some donation as a seed donation?" So the IDA voted at our last board meeting to give $100,000. Like everybody else, the economy's down. We're not moving properties. We're not making deals. So, our budget isn't the soundest either. But we felt that it was really important to take money out of our business development funds, put the $100,000 up, and then I know that they're working on approaching private businesses and other entities that could make a tax-exempt donation to be added to that money. And what the county did is we didn't want at the IDA, obviously, we have a very small staff. We're very busy right now, and we didn't really want to have to take on a whole new program of deciding how to grant this money, et cetera. So the county put it into their Main Street revitalization program, which is they've had that for about 7 years. They have the mechanics and the structure and other things in place. And I believe at this point what they're doing is giving matching grants of $7,500. And the people who need this money clearly have enough match. And we don't really, you know, we're really not being very particular. If it's FEMA money or if it's from the Catskill Watershed Corporation money or from what other source you're getting it from, you know, we're just looking. And it was important to our board of directors that our donation be leveraged, okay? We wanted to see not only small businesses come back, but see them leverage it against all the other little pieces and put them together.
It seems like one of the criticisms of the IDA for a long time has been that it's been focused up in the northeast part of the county where the infrastructure, I guess there's railroad tracks and there's power lines and such. Is this part of an effort to work with more of the rest of the county?
Well, I would say yes and yes and no. I mean, A, when I took over, one of the promises that I made is that I recognized that we were taking a lot of criticism. And one is I wanted to be able to explain, I think, better why we were working in that area, because I think people, as you know, from reading the press and stuff, people, seem to make allusions that it was tied to, where the location of staff and or board members lived and favoritism. And really, that's quite the opposite of the truth. We had every intention of branching out. One of my strengths in helping with business development in the watershed, in the New York City watershed, as you're aware of, is, that's a whole other world up there. There is a, everything that we do regulatory wise down here, double it when you go up there. And the city is obviously, when you talk about 800 pounds gorillas, this is an 800 pound gorilla on steroids.
New York City, yes.
Yeah, New York City. So, but I've worked with their programs for over 20 years. So I have a strength in knowing how to get around their, not to get around, but how to work within their regulations and effectively get something done. So, we had intentions to start, migrating or branching out into other parts of the county. Again, would a reasonable program that fits the resources we have. I mean, nothing would be worse for us than to promise a bunch of stuff and then not deliver on that promise. And again, the flood came along and sort of upset the apple cart on me, and it surely gave us an opportunity. But we've done work up there. We've helped the both ski mountains try to get to get their improvements to their facilities to keep up and be competitive. By doing tax exemptions and sales tax and mortgage tax on ski lifts and stuff like that.
And they both seem to be doing quite well, it seems like.
Well, as well as any ski resort can do when you're in a very competitive market. And that whole ski economy has changed. It's gone away from the week-long vacations to the day traveler or the short weekend traveler. People are being drawn up to Vermont. They're being drawn up to Jiminy Peak. And then, as you know, there's a big, there's always the controversy of them competing with Bel Air to the south in Ulster County as a state facility. So it's a business that has a very high risk, very narrow margin, and any little bit of incentive you can do to get them to say up. And let's face it, we're a speed society, okay? And so if it means getting to the mountain, top of the mountain 30 seconds faster for one extra run, that's important. So we have done work for them, and I hate to say that the flood was an opportunity, but I think more importantly, our outreach on the flood was partly because of my passion of having worked up there for a long time and just seeing how bad this is, as well as a recognition that we could partner effectively with the county planning department, economic development department, and kind of combine our strengths to help out up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the IDA has come in for a lot of criticism, and that's true. And first of all, I do want to thank you for being here, because we did reach out to Sandy Mathis three times recently to get him on the show, and he was always too busy. But I'd just like to try and clear something up, especially since you emphasised the importance of transparency. So what really happened there with him? There was all this controversy over his bonus of $175,000, and then all the board members, many board members resigned. Can you address at all why the board members resigned?
Well,
any of that?
Well, it's funny you're right. We've taken a lot of criticism, and as I'm very well aware of it, and quite a transition having been an executive director of an organization that was, I would almost say, beloved with Soil and Water, and then going to an agency that was under constant fire. Fortunately, I do have fairly thick skin, or it's either that or I'm Dutch with a thick head. Could be one of the both. I think at the end of the day, Ann, what the answer here is that it was just time for some change. I think everybody recognized, both Sandy himself and he was a good friend. I mean, obviously I haven't seen him since, but I think even he recognized that, sometimes things sort of run their course. Again, with some of the board members having been there very extended periods of time, that it was just time to make some change. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that happened. I think we would all agree in retrospect, and I know that, in communications, when Sandy submitted his formal letter of resignation is that he acknowledged that, you know, change is good and it's time for change. I'm looking forward, you know, and I have people say to me, well, you know, you need to look back. You need to pay attention to what happened. And I tell them I was sitting in the office. I saw it firsthand. And I've been around as a public servant now for over 25 years. I think I got a pretty good handle on what we might have done wrong and what we need to do to fix that. And hence not making you call me three times to get on the show.
Well, no, I appreciate that. But again, as I said, I think if you're emphasizing transparency, you do have to address this issue because it has been, a huge bone of contention with the IDA.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, again, really came down to sort of a differences of opinion in style. I think, you know, we weathered such heavy criticism and it was a breaking point, quite frankly. And again, I think it. No ands, if what's about it. I know that it diminished my effectiveness even as a director of community environmental programs. You know, the constant heat, and everybody was calling change. And so really at the heart of it, at the end of the day, I mean, you can point fingers at all kinds of little other things, but they weren't important. They weren't really what the issue was. There was clearly a need for change. They say a leopard doesn't change its spots, and I believe that truly. I could tell you that I'm pretty much the hard-headed guy that I am, and you're not going to change me too much. And I think that there was just that recognition that it was that there needed to be some change and needed to be moved on. Board members recognized that. You know, regrettably, you know, some of them were associated with the fact that, you know, we've been here a long time. New blood will maybe take some of the criticism away and allow some new direction to occur. And in one case, one board member left quite innocently in that he had a business, Bob Snyder from Greenville, had a business that was really consuming his time. Great for him. His business was growing leaps and bounds. And he just couldn't make the kind of commitment that it took to be on a board. And he just unfortunately happened to need to make the split about, you know, the wrong time. And there was some assumptions made that was connected. But so really we only had two board members, I think, that kind of said, you know, the two of them said, we've been here for a long time. We've been doing this. There needs to be some empty seats to get some new blood in here. And let's do that and try to move the thing forward.
So speaking of new blood, who will be filling the vacant
Well, we've had two positions that have been filled already, and we have currently have one vacant position that's out there that has been vacant for a little bit. And those two members that just filled it, one is Dan Lacey, who's with Lacey Ford in Catskill, a businessman down there, and the other one is Ken Dudley, who's the owner of Tip Top Furniture in Freehold. Ken and I actually have a professional relationship from the past. He, as a county legislature, he was on my board at the Soil and Water District, and we worked very closely together for 10 years. And I can assure you, Ken has, you know, in a lovingly way, harassed me for details and attention to detail for 10 years at Soil and Water, and he clearly hasn't changed in the hiatus since we've been working with each other. So, I welcome both of the gentlemen. Again, some new eyes, some new areas that the county represented, and everybody's sort of taking a look. Like, this is an opportunity to sort of not necessarily recreate ourselves or press the reset button, as my friends at the Daily Mail like to put it in the headlines. I thought it was actually the Daily News when I read the article, but that's not the intent. We're fully aware of where we've been, what we've been through, and I think I'm very, very aware where we need to go. Okay, and I think I can look back on all my years as executive director of Soil and Water. Is being both qualified to be an administrator as well as being very attuned to some of the sensitivities of how to deal with the public and how to make, you know, people address transparency.
Yeah, Greene County legislator Forrest Cotton raised that Mr. Dudley had previously applied for a loan from the Green IDA and thought that was a conflict of interest and inappropriate for him to be nominated to the board. Do you share that view, or do you have a different view of that matter?
Well, how do I put this? I always find it difficult to sort out what is really the attention. What's the real fact? What's the real interest or the real concern here versus the not real? I got to tell you,
Mr. Dudley's a Republican and Mr. Cotton is a Democrat. Is I think I, maybe
know,
where
at
you're
the
getting.
Time, you know, at the time, you know, Mr. His application was made. I wasn't involved in any of it, so you know, I'm speculating. So my opinion is just exactly what is a personal opinion. But you know, we constantly have, you know, let's face it this way, we have appearances of conflict, another thing, partly in my opinion, in our society, because we have so few people who are willing to step up and do it. You know, there's so few people willing to step up that you often, in a small county like Greene County, will have people that play multiple roles. And you know what they say when you have a conflict, it's an ethical problem. It's an appearance, and appearances are different to everybody. You know, I think that we have laws and rules that say that when you're on a governing body, you recuse yourself from any discussion, or you recuse yourself from any voting. You go on the record as doing that, and that's accepted and done every day at all levels of government, in all levels and all types and all colors of politicians. I know in Mr. Dudley's case, his application went through an independent commission that was bipartisan, bankers, well-heeled businessmen in the community, and they saw no problem with it. You know, if it had gone forward, he would have done just what everybody else does when they have a conflict. They would have recused. These aren't full-time legislators. They have day jobs, so there's a likelihood at some point or another there could be an appearance thing. I give him credit for being maybe the bigger guy in the group and pulling his application and waiting until his term had expired. I can tell you this, is that I've worked with Ken Dudley, as I said earlier, for over 10 years as a director, and I go to sleep every night having no question of his ethics or his morality or his concern and care for the community, quite frankly. And that's my opinion, and that's also my professional judgment of him as a board member, as well as my personal experience with him, not only as a board member, but as a friend for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. And as part of this new IDA, will you become director?
I think that's probably a very good question. I think that interim is on purpose. I know that I would, while I think that I'm more than qualified, obviously, to do the position, as I said earlier, I was an executive director of Soil and Water. I had 25 people working for me there, three at Soil and Water. I had about a $700,000 budget at the IDA. I had $3.5 million operating. So I think from clearly, administratively and being an executive, I clearly can handle it. But I think it's more important right now that there'd be no jump or no rapid movement to make any decisions on that. I've personally not that the board has had an offer, but even if they did tomorrow offer, I would insist that it stay in the way that it stays for a while. Because quite frankly, I have to address the board who clearly signs my paycheck. I think given 6 months to a year, the person who will make the decision as whether I stay will be the people. And if people don't start turning the comments around, and if you read some of the stuff recently, you see that people are genuinely seem to be trust me. My track record is such. I've not changed. I said leopard don't change its spots. I was honest, hardworking guy at Soil and Water. I did not change just because I worked with the IDA. So if I feel at some point that I've successfully turned this around and that we've gained trust of the community and we're really integrated in the community, then I would consider taking the position. I've also made it known that my preference would be the way I've worked my entire career is to work without contract. I've always gone to work. My only thing I've ever told my board of directors, if you don't want me to come in the morning, just call me before I leave the house. Save me that last trip with the gas money. Okay. I've always worked that well, and I've never lost a night's sleep wondering whether I'm going to have a job next day, on that. So
aside from Hurricane Irene, what are the larger issues facing attracting industry to Greene County?
Thanks for the question, because that's actually good. I think that of course we're in a rural area. I would break it down into a couple of areas. I think one is understanding of the general citizenry of how economic development works and the challenges and the realities of it. Okay, for example, New York. I just said earlier, New York State is an extremely terrible state from a taxation standpoint to work in. This is not. It's a very competitive field that we're in. I commonly make the analogy that picking a businesses to bring into your community is not like going to the cereal aisle at Price Chopper, where there's so many choices you get dizzy before you can figure out what cereal you want. There's so limited number of companies that are out there looking to either move, come into the area, or expand. So the reality is you just don't have the luxury to say, well, this one came in here and tried to quote unquote strong arm me for a tax break, so I'm just going to say you go away and I'm going to wait for the next guy to come. That is factual reality. Whether people like you giving tax breaks or don't like you giving tax breaks, the fact of the matter is there's very few businesses that are coming. and it's extremely competitive. Every day, almost in the local press or somewhere online, you can see where some community is playing against another community or one state against another state. We'll offer you this, we'll offer you that. The businesses know how to play this game. And I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. In one end, I would tell you, well, if my taxes are too high to do business in New York, I'm going to do everything I can to get my taxes down. I make the analogy with people often. I say, so when you go buy a new car, you walk into the dealer, you look at the sticker price, you know, and you start writing a check on the way over to the salesman's desk. Well, of course not. You know, I dicker. Well, what if he doesn't bring your price down? Well, I'll go to another dealer. I do it all the time. Hey, you know, there's such and such. What makes you think business is any different than this? It's the human nature at the end of the day, quite frankly. Why do you think the parking lots are at their maximum capacity at retail outlets on Black Friday? Everybody's looking for the best discount they can get. I didn't create that condition, nor did Sandy Mathis or the Green IDA board. So if you recognize, first of all, that it's extremely competitive, you don't offer, you're out of the game. That's all there is to it. Don't like the rules myself, quite frankly. I'd love to roll the country back, you know, a century or so back to, you know, business ethics and community ethics and the rest of it. I'm very much an old-hearted soul that way. But I'm also not naive, and I also realize this is the real world we work in. So the trick and the balance of it. Second, I don't think people understand that when we do, let's say, you know, we bring in a company, there's an old piece of farmland, it hasn't been farmed for a long time, and that's that. We could do a whole show on the plight of farming. That, you know, that piece of property is paying minuscule to nothing taxes. So if you're not competitive and you don't compete and offer some tax breaks to bring them in, what happens to that field? It stays that field still paying the small amount of taxes. So you either subscribe or don't subscribe to, I'd rather have a slice of pie than no pie. Because that is basically what it is at the end of the day. You have a slice of the pie or you have none of the pie. I do think that there's valid criticism. In Greene County, you know, we've actually met our job creation numbers that we've always stated. Have we done a good enough job about letting people know that? Probably not. Clearly we haven't, okay? And I'm going to remedy that. I'm working on remedy that. But we've met the job creation goals that we've set. So, I'll give you a quick example. We're putting together a solar generation project right now that'll go on a 100-acre piece of farmland that's right behind the prison, right along the railroad tracks. The developer identified it because the transmission line capacity is there. There's only a couple of these lines in the entire county that you can make the solar generation juice fit into the line. That piece of particular farmland has always been lousy farmland. It's not suitable much for housing. If it was housing, it would be lower end, and I'm not... opposed to housing at all across all sectors, but the fact is, housing at most levels is a drain on your tax base. You provide more services than they pay in property taxes, and you need to have business to supplement that. So we have a piece of property that's been paying last year paid $1,050 total property tax: school, county, towns, fire district, ambulance district, library. The solar generation project right out of the box will pay a minimum of $20,000. So, we did some calculations. We figured a 3% tax increase over 20 years. It turns out that project, if it stays in the current land use, that piece of parcel, will produce about $56,000 in taxes. In that same 20-year period, the solar generation project will produce about $2.6 million. As opposed to 56,000. Are we giving them a tax break? Absolutely. Because you know why? There's three other fields in Schoharie County, Albany County, Rensselaer County that they can just as easily go to one of them fields and get offered those same tax brackets. So when I sit there and say, do I sort of cut off my nose to spite my face and not compete with the other people? Or do I say, geez, you know, 2.6 is a heck of a lot better than 56. And these are not voodoo numbers or anything else. These are real simple math and simple philosophies. And again, so, and then lastly, what I would tell you, a major challenge for us in Greene County is infrastructure. And you're seeing this on the news every day now, at a national level with Obama, with his, you know, plan. I'm not familiar with it, so I can't comment on it. But the fact is, our infrastructure is falling apart. We, again, as human nature, what do? We are terrible about taking care of things. We are terrible about saying, geez, it cost me $1 million to build this bridge. 25 years from now, I got to build another one. I need to put $1,000 away in the bank every year so I have $1 million, those when it needs to go. Our infrastructure is falling down around us. There is not a community in Greene County, one village out there, that has excess sewer capacity, that has, well, you know, some of them are okay on water. Coxsackie in particular has, you know, has made upgrades.
But there are you can't hook up in Cairo. You can't hook up in other places.
You can't. They're under moratoriums. And so when businesses come in, they're like, well, we need, you know, we got 300 people and, you know, they got to go to the bathroom and we need to hook up. We don't have it. So lack of infrastructure is clearly a big issue for us. Our transportation infrastructure, not so bad, you know, being the locations of where we are. And that kind of goes back to Coxsackie, you know, is why Coxsackie was picked and why Coxsackie has experienced the growth. Some things that people don't realize is that back in the early 90s, the town of Coxsackie, the village of Coxsackie, the county of Greene, and the state of New York, because of the prisons, each put $4 million into a pot of money and paid to put infrastructure in. It was the first new sewer lines in my that I've seen in my since I was a little kid actually laid to new areas. So they made that investment for the future by running new sewer and new water lines out to access these lands. That's key. And again, my, you know, and Vinny will be in here later and you can see, but watch the newspapers. You don't quite, unfortunately, do not see a lot of municipal cooperation off in Greene County. And until we can kind of put aside some of that territorialism or whatever and say, geez, we got to work together. And I mean, really work together. We got to put money up because there's no little economic development Smurfs going to come around and put some little pixie dust down and poof, it turns into businesses. You got to put cold, hard cash into investment of infrastructure.
And that's why that area gets more development is because it has railroad lines, it has access to the interstate that trucks can get on. You said sewer lines, there's power lines from Athens Generation. So that's correct. Why that's really why that area is get the more development than the rest of the county.
And the thruway is a big part of it. If you look, you know, there's two large distribution warehouses there. We've looked at sites in Athens and tried, you know, believe it or not, I'm not the CFO or the CEO of these companies, but there is a major difference for them when they say you got to drive 7 miles to get on the thruway up Route 9W, or you got to drive a half a mile. Time is money. You know, they know the old adage, and it's true. They want easy on, easy off. We had flat and open land there. You know, I constantly, when people approach me about this, I point them to Walmart in Catskill. Okay? Now, we all know that Walmart's like pop up overnight. Okay? Right, whether we like it or not, they just seen the pop up overnight. It took them literally close to 5 years to find a site in Catskill where they could actually site a Walmart. You know, so if you put all the passion aside and all the rest, and you just look purely at land base, you look at infrastructure, you look at slopes, topography, wetlands, archaeology, you look at the things that impact development, go find me a piece of land that's much bigger than 100 acres within a mile of that Catskill Thruway exit or 2 miles of that Catskill Thruway exit that has those things. It's not there. It doesn't exist, you know. And unfortunately, we can move sewer lines out. We can start to do some of that. But again, it goes back to some investments got to be made at all levels from everybody.
Okay, well, we're fast running out of time here. We were going to open this up to callers.
If we get any, they can call in right now.
It's five already, yes. If you have any burning questions out there, you better call in now or else we'll have to save it for next time, right?
Okay. I'd be glad to come back anytime and speak with you.
Are there any new projects in the works that you could tell us about or hint at least?
Well, you know that we've been working on the water park project. You know, we started out before the economy went crazy when we had been approached by a large national sporting chain, and everybody pretty much knows that was Cabela's at the time, was looking to site here. That Coxsackie Thruway interchange has like 55,000 cars a day go by on a busy weekends, especially on holiday weekends. So we're in an area where we can capture people. We've been in negotiation. We did a seeker. We did a generic environmental impact statement, spent well over $1.5 million, did a lot of work to address the community's needs, you know, what the community's concerns were. We went from having packed halls of people adamantly pitchforking us and burning oil pots outside to actually getting those diehard people who were against the project to support it at a scale that was reasonable for the community. And then the economy went down the tubes overnight. Fortunately, a year and a half later, what didn't go away was the fact that people still do vacations, they still do tourism, and they're actually doing more of these short vacations like to these water park type places than long week ones. So they came, we knew the site was ideal, and eventually someone would come back around and say, look, the economy's picking up, I got to do this. So we're working on that right now. We've got a very favorable financial performer that we've done. We had independent outside economic analysis done of both the market study as well as secondary impacts. But the bottom line comes down to it's going to take a fairly substantial investment in public infrastructure to support it, probably in the tune right now of 10 to 12 million in public infrastructure investment, which will immediately generate 115 million in private investment, as well as the associated growth that will come with that in the adjoining acreage and 530 jobs, substantial sales tax, and other things.
Some of the criticism of that is that it may impact very negatively an existing business in the county, the Zoom Flume.
Well, you know, actually, glad you brought that up, because we actually did something that nobody has ever done with a Great Wolf before. And we, one thing that I did is Sandy had sort of negotiated an agreement. The Kerrigans didn't quite feel that agreement was binding.
The Kerrigans are the owners of the Zoom Flume?
Owners of Zoom Flume. So one of the things that I did is we've executed with our developer a binding agreement of that has a couple stipulations. One, there'd be no outdoor water park component. Okay, so there will not, so there's no direct competition with them. Second of all, they will not do any day passes. You know, the way these Great Wolves operate is you don't just get to walk in off the street, go to the water park. It's just like up in Lake George at Six Flags. You have to stay overnight and be a resident of the hotel for the night to use the water park. In off season and slow times, they will do a certain number of day passes. We got them to agree that between Father's Day and Labor Day, when Kerrigan gets closed, no day passes. So, you know, even I said to, you know, to Ed and Denise, okay, what else is on the table? Because I see you're really held completely harmless now. And I would tell you that the commitment we have from Great Wolf is that they get it. You guys know now that you can't walk in off the street, because I just told you. Most people don't realize that. So they get a lot of drop-in traffic. People come in, the kids are screaming, we want a water park, we want a water park. And they got to tell them, sorry, unless you're staying here. But they've agreed that they would put tent cards on the counter and say, but by the way, if the kids really want to go to a water park, there's this Zoom Flume that's just 20 minutes away. So they've already agreed that they would, especially when they're at full occupancy, they would refer people there. Walk-ins that are looking to come in for the day use, they would refer them to the Zoom Flume. So quite frankly, you know, we'll see how it all bears out. But right, I think we've put the mechanism in place not only to protect them, but actually to promote their business.
Okay. Well, I think we've sort of...
I think we've run out of time.
We've run out of time.
Clearly,
we could go on forever.
Right.
But is there anything else you'd like to add quickly, briefly, to what we've already discussed?
No, because anybody knows me. I don't do anything quickly or briefly, okay. Even though I speak very fast. But thank you for having me. And I look forward to being able to come back in any way that the station could maybe use our help or have us participate. And I'm fully on board with trying to make people understand, and I completely support the whole concept of community radio. So
that's great to
welcome
hear.
Welcome a relationship with you.
Well, thank you so much, Rene Van Schaak, who's the interim, perhaps soon to be director of the IDA, Industrial Development Agency of Greene County.
All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes on the WGXC afternoon show.
Okay. Hello, I'm Pamela Badila of Jata Jata International Folkloric Theater, and you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Greenport, Claverack, Kinderhook, so many towns and villages and cities in Columbia and Greene County. This is listener-supported hands-on radio.
The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene County's 5th Annual Pumpkin Walk will be held at our new location, Columbia Greene Community College, on Saturday, October the 15th. Family entertainment, including Tots the Clown, will begin at 4, followed by the Pumpkin Walk at 6. Journey down the path lined with twinkling jack-o'-lanterns, a great family activity. For more information on this event, call Christina at 518-828-4619, extension 302.
WGXC founding underwriting support is provided by Hawthorne Valley Association, Harlemville, New York, a diverse educational nonprofit set on a 400-acre working farm in central Columbia County. Farm, farm store, early childhood through grade 12 Waldorf school, and more. For more information, www.hawthornevalleyassociation.org.
Mm.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC headlines at 5 o'clock. We'll have Vincent Seeley, excuse me, from the Village of Catskill in a few minutes on the WGXC afternoon show. First, Jennifer Steinhauer reports in the New York Times that the U.S. Senate voted Monday, September 26, 79-12, to approve funding for the government for 7 more weeks. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, reported that it has $114 million on hand to last this week. There was a possibility that FEMA, with emergency centers currently in Greene and Columbia counties because of the storms associated with Hurricane Irene, might run out of money this week. But that does not seem to be the case. Both Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand voted for that measure. The Hudson Common Council had a special meeting last night to talk about the LWRP, the Local Waterfront Plan. Dan Udell, WGXC volunteer, has made a recording, and you can hear it at your leisure, and we'll play that also at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning on the WGXC morning show during the Tell It Like It Is time slot. There's some new things come out of that, and you can read them on the WGXC newsroom blog or listen to the recording at WGXC.org. It is 78 degrees in Hudson right now. The National Weather Service predicts a 40% chance of showers tonight after 9 p.m. with a low around 58. Wednesday, there's a 50% chance of showers with a high near 67. Tonight, there are town meetings in Canaan with a public hearing before the Zoning Board of Appeals at 7 p.m. at Canaan Town Hall. In Greenport, there's a planning board meeting at 7:30 p.m. at Greenport Town Hall. Hillsdale, the town board holds a special meeting on the tentative budget for 2012 at 7 p.m. at the Hillsdale Town Hall tonight. Hudson, the Common Council Economic Development Committee, meets at 6 p.m. at City Hall and 520 Warren Street in Hudson. And Stuyvesant, the zoning board, meets and discusses sound issues around the Glencadia Dog Camp again tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Town Hall, 5 Sunset Drive in Stuyvesant. The sunset tonight is 6:47. The moon goes down at 6:34, and it's a new moon as of 6 a.m. this morning. Birthdays today include Jim Thompson, Bud Powell, Wilfred Brimley, and Carrie Brownstein. Here is Brian Dewan, a Catskill resident, his song called Our Ever-Improving Village, about perhaps about the town of Catskill on the WGXC Afternoon Show.
This is another kind of municipal kind type song called The Ever-Improving Village. The antifreeze and Pepto-Bismol, sunset tips aslant. It seeps into the water table like a sewage treatment plant. Rustbox swing set screeches on which feral children play. Their hollers strain through chain link fences all the mean dog day. Hang a left at Colonial Drug, the local den of sin. Kitty corner across the street from the horse and buggy motor inn. Crooked mile past Murderer's Creek, just north of Indian Head Hill, lies our ever-improving village on the banks of Thornbush Kill. The powers that be won't likely vote for doing something rash, like plow the streets or fill in potholes or pick up household trash. Listen to the singing and the song of bees, they say. The song of ivory for being old and in the way. They put a wub mart up invoking eminent domain in hopes it will kill off the local business that remains. Yet once there was an ordinance that you couldn't build no higher than the statue of William Penknife or the second parish spire.